I'm here today with one of my best friends, Charlotte. We've been meaning to record this for a while. So today we're going to be getting into stalking.
Love it. But really, like, two hot girls talking about stalking. Like, I don't think it gets better than that. This is riveting.
It's definitely something we both have, like, personal experience with, and we're inspired to do this episode because we started watching that Netflix documentary. I don't remember exactly what the name of it even was, but I found super interesting about the show, and I immediately texted Charlotte as soon as I started watching this, was that they very nicely incorporated the perpetrator and their mental illnesses into the show in a way that it definitely helped me understand, and it made me curious about, like, okay, what really is this?
Yeah, I'm with you. When you, like, messaged me about, I think it's called I Am a Stalker.
I think so, yeah.
I don't know, something simple like that. When you messaged me right away, I was like, okay, if I watch this, will I be too triggered?
I know, and I remember telling you that in the messages. I was like, FYI, like, don't watch it if you could be triggered. Here's exactly what I meant, but let me know. This could be interesting.
And it was interesting because I think they went into the very extreme cases where, like, people had been severely injured, even killed. And especially when they get into the definition of, like, what a stalker is. And I was like, oh my gosh, how did I not? Because when it was happening to me, I just didn't even register it. And I think a lot of people are actually going through these situations of genuine harassment and stalking, and you don't even realize it. It's like a bit of the definition of it, and you're like, wait a second. Like, I have experienced that, I've gone through that, and it was very, it's just kind of eye-opening.
Yeah, it's like very alarming to be able to relate to something that is so crazy, and then to sit there and relate to it. Like, it's a lot, it's a huge pill to have to swallow.
It's a lot to process, for sure. I like how it's kind of bringing more awareness to stalking, though, because I feel like people don't take it seriously. When I talk to people even about what happened to me, they kind of, like, laugh and they're like, oh, haha, like, as if it's some kind of funny story to laugh about.
Yeah.
But they don't realize how in danger I felt and how scared I was for so long. And I think shows like this at least help bring awareness to how serious it can actually get.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Circling back to the definitions that they gave in the show, it was cool researching for this episode and looking up the definition of stalking and where it originated from, where it came from. The first time that stalking was mentioned or coined as a term was in 1995, which is, like, recently in the
younger than me.
Things. Yeah, like, I was gonna say, like, that's just a few years before I was born. And then another thing that was interesting was the first ever definition of stalking was used to describe a male persistently pursuing a female partner after a breakup.
Yeah, that part, I feel like it limits it so much, and the legitimacy as well, because it's just focusing on men. And again, I don't think there's enough in that definition explaining how, like, serious it is.
Yeah.
And like we were discussing before.
Yeah, it's interesting that the first time that this behavior seemed to be, like, a concern in the public eye, it was just men versus women.
Yeah.
In terms of the other names that it's been referred to as, like, psychological rape, which is so heavy. Like, when I was reading that, I was like, wow, that's such an intense term for stalking and harassment. But, you know, it makes you think, like, this is obviously a psychologically impactful thing if it can be referred to as something as intense as that.
That's the other issue, is I think when you bring up psychological rape, people cannot quite comprehend that because it's not a physical act, and it's so difficult to prove it and to show how it's abusing someone. You don't see those physical stains, right?
Yeah.
You are not the same after, and you will never be the same after, much like in unfortunate situations with rape.
And so what's interesting about that too is in the legal definition, which we haven't gotten into yet, but a lot of the actions that, you know, go into someone stalking are completely normal and legal. So that there's huge implications to that too.
That was the other thing, is I think where can the line be drawn though? An unhealthy extent of stalking, because right. We're all guilty of soft stalking, I would say, especially in the online world.
I feel like especially online, most people are guilty of like deep diving through people's Facebook profiles and like, you know, like there's a guy you like and you know about the family holiday he took in 2007 and like, you know how much his house is worth because you looked it up. Maybe that's an extreme case, but I definitely know lots of people and lots of girls who are, you know, guilty of deep diving into people like that, which is,
yeah,
you know, like when I think stalky behavior, like that's one thing I think of. But when I think about things like that, I also think that as women, we deep dive as a means of protection as well. It's like we're trying to figure out who is this person and what are you all about and what are the things I can learn about you from the things that you have online. And I think that is valid to a degree.
100%.
Compared to someone, you know, actually harassing someone. And I think the line comes from if someone else is being caused some kind of distress from your behavior. Like when we're when we're stalking that guy looking at his family photos from 2007, like not exactly hurting anyone per se. It's not the healthiest behavior to have. You probably shouldn't be doing that. But I think that's different from when you're doing something to someone where they're actually going to suffer from it, whether it's psychologically, physically, whatever.
Yeah, is it hurting someone else? Is it hurting other people, what you're doing? I think that's a good point. That's maybe where you can see the line being drawn. And as women, I think it is, like you were saying, it is kind of fair to like go into that soft stalking where you're like, okay, what are they about? Like, am I seeing any red flags here? Especially when you're someone who's already been through like abusive situations. Mm-hmm. It's so natural to actually like just investigate a person when you first meet them or new people come into your life. Like it's a natural response to do that. Yeah, so I agree with what you're saying where it comes down to, okay, is this hurting anyone?
Most of what I could find basically outlined someone inflicting unwanted, repeated behavior towards someone else. More times than not, it's described as a series of actions over a period of time. And then again, as we mentioned, some of those actions are perfectly legal, which creates a whole extra nuance in figuring out like what is stalking, how can we prove if someone is being psychologically raped or harassed, how can we prove that? In terms of the things that are legal, it's like calling someone on the phone, texting them, sending them gifts, emailing them, to a point where it's, you know, mentally damaging someone else and it's not consensual at that point.
I was thinking how, I mean, if someone's parked outside your home consistently and they're not doing anything, they're not physically doing anything, but they're consistently just there outside your home, maybe watching you. I mean, that to me, that I experienced that and that was frightening, but I can't just go to the cops and be like, hey, this person's like always just parked there. And honestly, it's making me scared. What can I do? I don't think like people will not take that seriously.
Yeah, but it's not even a question of like you don't think people will take it seriously. They didn't take it seriously.
No,
and like that exact scenario wasn't taken seriously. But it's interesting because in Canada, what stalking would be charged as is there's a few charges that it would be charged as. So there's no like stalking charge that you would be charged under, or like there's no, doesn't exist. So what it would be charged as is criminal harassment. So I think that just, you know, harassment makes sense. Trespassing at night, assaults, uttering threats, intimidation, nothing's really gonna happen.
Exactly. Again, with someone just being parked outside your home, technically that's not illegal, right? I mean, so how do you make something of that as well?
And that's exactly it, right? Like when we've been in these situations where tried to get help over this, it's immediately been like, okay, but they're not actually doing anything to harm you.
And how far does it need to escalate before they actually do something about it? Do you know what I mean?
Right, like, harm reduction or prevention. Yeah. Just like, we'll deal with it when something bad, really bad happens. But until then, there's not really anything we can do. I didn't have as much difficulty getting a restraining order because what I dealt with was like a violent aggravated assault. So it was just like a given that there's going to be restraining orders involved. But almost every single woman that I've spoken to that has come to me looking for help on how the hell did you get this restraining order? I'm dealing with XYZ. It hasn't been enough evidence or enough harm done for them to consider a restraining order to be appropriate.
And that's what's so hard is when you don't have that physical evidence always of reflecting that. But even when you do have the evidence, because eventually I did go to the cops and they recommended that I don't press charges, which is really funny to me. And this was before the physical incident happened, that I went to the cops and I'm like, hey, this is what's happening. I can even show you like my phone records. And they literally recommended that I don't do anything about it because they're like, honestly speaking, not a lot can become of this, even with what you've shown us and told us. Mm-hmm. And that just makes me see like the system that's literally set up against the victim. And it's no wonder we're growing up in this culture where when it's a woman telling you a story, you're so much more likely to question it and second guess it and be like, okay, but what was she doing? And is she really a reliable source?
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that about the system being set up against the victim, because in Canada, it basically says on the government website that criminal harassment, which is what stalking is classified under, is a legislation that is a response to the increasing violence against women. So you're telling me that this legislation is literally a response to violence against me, but it's not protecting me really. Like, it's not really doing much. And then we've also had discussions about how damaging psychologically it can be for a victim when, you know, in any case, like whether it's stalking, domestic violence, whatever you might need to go to the police for as a woman, like when you're shut down by the people you're going to for help and you don't even feel like these people are listening to you or believe you, what the fuck are you supposed to do?
That's the other issue, is like there's not, we have these establishments saying in writing even what you can do and where you can go in these situations, but they're not actually, you don't see it in action, to be
so
honest.
This is what it says on their website. It says you should have a good reason to fear your personal safety. But even that, it's like, that's it. Legally, you're saying that's it, but that's not all you need. It says it should be classified as a repeated behavior, but in certain instances, if the incident is threatening enough, one incident could count towards criminal harassment.
And that's wild to me though, because they have this there, this is in writing, sure, the policies are there, but when you actually go and seek out help and you go to authorities or whomever, they don't put this in action. Like, you're not supported whatsoever.
I feel like there's just so much nuance, right?
Yeah.
And it makes me feel like there's so much that we don't know about, okay, what do I actually genuinely need to prove my case in this situation if this was to happen? On one side, you're trying to tell me that I'm protected by the law and, you know, you guys got my back, but on the other side, there's so many of us that have gone through this and not seen, and if anything, we've left more traumatized by the court process than we were.
Yeah, because I mentioned this before to you, I'll never forget what you told me. And this was years ago now, where you're like, honestly, when you go to the authorities and you seek official, like, legal help, it's almost more traumatic than the event itself. And that really stuck with me. And because of that, I was like, you know what? I have already been experiencing some of that. I don't think it's even worth it to take any legal action. Because I didn't take legal action, I have found people doubt my credibility because of that. And they just don't realize, like, I genuinely just did not have that support system to do it at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I went to friends and, like, honestly, a fair amount of them didn't even believe my side of the story. And I mentioned to you before, like, I lost one of my best friends in the process because she took my stalker's side. Mm-hmm. And just, so it's just interesting that this narrative is there, but yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Like, a lot of the time you work up the courage to ask for help or to go and even then, I think we had a similar conversation about how it takes a lot to even realize that there's something going on. So it's like when you go and ask for help and you're invalidated by law enforcement, friends and family, the perpetrator, it's like you think you're crazy. And
you do.
One of the symptoms, I guess, or one of the consequences of experiencing something like this is just like fully not having like a good sense of perception of yourself and questioning, like, okay, what am I doing to deserve this kind of behavior? Like, how am I making this problem? Maybe I'm the problem.
And that's the thing, because everyone doubts you, and we are raised in this culture and society where it's kind of ingrained in us to question women more often with their stories. It's just there. It's a pattern. You can't deny it. I find, but like you're saying with perception, I'm always thinking, okay, but like, what did I do wrong? Why am I attracting these types? Surely it's like on me, like I'm the guilty party here, or did I do something to egg them on? I'm always putting it on myself, which is kind of ridiculous when you think about it. Mm-hmm. And there's no sense of like having compassion for yourself as well, where it's like, literally there's maybe nothing you could have done differently. This person legitimately was in the wrong. Weirdly, a tough pill to swallow.
It really does like damage your sense of self-worth and your self-esteem. That alone is just a huge consequence or impact of stalking on a victim.
Yeah, and I think with these assault cases too, it's because you're thinking, oh, what have I done wrong though? And you're not putting it really on the guilty party in that sense. But I'm so drawn to people who are lost, right? And so I put it on myself where I'm like, okay, I ended up in this bad situation, but I put that on myself being like, I want to fix someone and I want to help them. It's in me to want, it's just in my nature to want to help people. So I've always been very attracted to people who have like problems. And then because I have that thinking, when I end up in a bad situation, particularly with a man, I'm putting it on myself. I'm like, well, I sought this out.
I think that definitely speaks to how like your typical victim of stalking, it's not like it's gonna happen or this happens to everyone, right? Like the kind of person that someone may target for this is gonna be someone who might have that subconscious inclination. It's very real, like that definitely happens to people. And it's also just interesting to see that the research itself in Canada shows that, you know, 72% of stalking victims are women. So it's not to dismiss the stalking that does happen to men, but it just speaks to the fact that this does seem to be like a more female dominated experience, if you can call it that. And it's totally valid to have that conversation about, okay, what does a woman stalker look like for men? You and I can't give that perspective, but what we can share is how insane it has been to go through that and to be constantly invalidated by law enforcement, friends and family, etc., etc.
Oh, exactly. I can definitely speak to that. Like, I think also with my issue too was I was saying how before I put it on myself where I get drawn to these situations where someone like needs saving, so naturally you're going to like attract maybe types. But I think also for me, I just grew up this way in this kind of like toxic environment, not necessarily like at home, but like you also grew up in a really conservative background as well,
yeah,
where you do put a lot of it on yourself when something bad happens, and sometimes you don't even recognize that something bad is happening to you. You're like meant to just think like, oh, it's not as bad as I'm making it, I'm being dramatic.
Yeah,
like,
or hush, hush, hush. It's immediately just like, what did I do
to put away? Yeah, it's always on you.
Yeah,
yeah, especially as a woman, I think that culture is very much there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, prior to this, I already had like a few experiences with like sexual assault, and then I was like diagnosed with PTSD when I was maybe 20, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think that even like I had this understanding that, okay, I've had these experiences and I have my PTSD, and but regardless of being aware of that, I was still kind of falling into these old patterns of being drawn to people who are just so bad for you and who have these red flags that other people would normally see like miles away.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that's just something I'm like drawn to, and it's familiar and it's comforting.
Yeah, I think there's a certain element of safety and familiarity that you feel in those situations when you're used to being in those situations, where it's like it's gonna feel more magnetic being drawn, or more natural interacting with a certain individual that's mirroring someone who you've interacted with in the past.
So I think it's important to consider your history and how that could play a role in
mm-hmm.
the psychology of it, but to also not to have like self-compassion and not blame yourself for what has happened. This was just someone who was genuinely and totally in the wrong, harming my life. They were repeatedly threatening me. I mean, he even threatened to harm my family and things like that. And still I was like, okay, no, but I have all these problems, so this is on me, like, to that I've drawn in this person, and you know, and I'm taking all the guilt in it and all the responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it's just, I think self-compassion is so important as well.
Mm-hmm. yeah, and I think your sense of compassion can really just be so off put by an experience like that. Like, there's a PTSD, and for you personally, like, that was already there before any of this happened. So usually PTSD, at least from the research I've done, is a common symptom from experiencing stalking, as well as the emotional trauma, isolation, the trust issues, having to change your address, change your phone number, change where you work, like the guilt, the self-blame, the lack of compassion for yourself. That's a big one. Fear, anxiety, and depression from dealing with that. And then I think one of the interesting ones was the personality changes from dealing with this kind of assault, where you're just not really the same person anymore.
Oh, for sure. I remember So for instance, like initially where my PTSD say was rooted from was like a sexual assault situation that I had when I was like 10 or 11. And then I remember pretty, and I didn't register this prior, but I had my personality shifted so much after that incident. Mm-hmm. Like I was a pretty like outgoing kid, made lots of friends. And then I remember like after that happened, like I suddenly became like closed off, really shy and like very much like distrusting anyone new. Like, and I didn't trust myself either with like understanding, okay, who is an okay person? Who's a good person? Who's a bad person? Yeah. Yeah. Etc. So I already had that background, and then going into like presently or more recently with my stalking situation where I had that PTSD from like the past already, and my thinking was just totally flawed.
You were so young, dealing with so many heavy things, and then progressively getting older and then dealing with a stalking situation, it checks out that, you know, your self-perception was so off-rooted by that.
Yeah, I think especially when you don't have a solid like support system, people to hear you out when just generally like bad things happen. Mm-hmm. I think that's also something. And so, you know, we have all this education out there currently with, you know, who to go to when you're experiencing something. And I remember reading so many articles being like, go to your family, go to your friends, go to like law enforcement. But if you're getting rejected from all those corners or you're not really feeling fully supported, I mean, what will happen? Like,
yeah, it's like you've done all the things that you were supposed to do and none of those things really got you the results that you were hoping for.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I think because childhood trauma too, it's just if you don't go through the therapy and you don't register what happened, you're just going to keep repeating and going through those consistently like similar experiences of abuse, I think. When a dog vomits, eventually it returns back to its vomit and eats it again.
Like, as disgusting as that is, like, it's
exactly
relatable in the sense that when you have been in chaos your whole life, it doesn't feel like trauma and chaos when you're in it.
Normal people will be like, this is wrong, I'm exiting this. But you don't see it that way. And it's so bad.
Hi.
Hey.
You want to stalk me? Like, you're obsessed with me.
You're obsessed with me. Oh my God.
Obsessed with me in 1 week. It makes sense. Like,
it makes sense.
Come on. Look at me.
Amazing. It makes sense. You're obsessed.
How a lot of women think when you're faced with this kind of behavior. And we were talking about this earlier too. For example, the show You. Same person, you're like, oh my goodness, like this is absolutely batshit crazy behavior, like why is this happening, this is not healthy. But there's a whole demographic of young girls and women that have romanticized that behavior and think that it wasn't stalkerish and think that it's romantic and desirable.
Those kinds of shows, I love them, they're entertaining, but they desensitize us and they make us romanticize very violent behavior. That's my problem. It's like, damn, I love that show, like You is so entertaining, but there are points where it's also extremely triggering for me, because, and it's sad because I think I do see that trend where women are literally romanticizing this stalker man, being like, oh my gosh, like he would do anything for her, he like goes to the ends of the earth and kills people for her.
He must love you if he killed someone for you. Almost taught to be flattered by that kind of behavior as a woman, and how, you know, someone pursuing you that, you know, like relentlessly, it's, you know, so it should be seen as a compliment, but it's not a compliment. And it really like blurs the lines between consent and just like, you know, it's cool to have, you know, attention, but when that attention becomes obsessive and stalkerish and unwanted, then where's the line between that and it being normal?
It also gives less power to women, because we're like, oh, this man is consistently pursuing me whether or not I like it, and we're supposed to be thinking this is flattering. There's no empowerment there. Because of that, it's like cases of sexual assault so easily come up, because again, women don't have this empowerment to feel that they can even reject a man. You know, we're made to feel like we need to be flattered that this man is taking interest and he's being so persistent about it. He's being manly about it because of his persistence. Mm-hmm. And then that also just gets into a whole other topic about like toxic masculinity and stuff.
It was really interesting, like, researching for this episode and looking into what it is from the perpetrator side that pushes them into this kind of behavior. So I found one study by Mullen, I believe. It's from 2000. And it basically describes, like, 4 or 5 different types of stalkers. And so reading this kind of helped me understand a little bit more about where this behavior might be coming from. So the first one was rejected stalkers, which is described as people who follow their victims in order to reverse, correct, or avenge a rejection. So yeah, it's essentially just someone not being able to handle rejection and then, you know, getting stalkery about it. I feel like that's pretty common.
Yeah, I find that relatable. The rejected stalkers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think in my situation, I was like consistently rejecting him. And he had these grand ideas that I'm not really rejecting him. He just needs to keep like persistently pursuing me. And what was hard was because he was friends with some of my friends as well. Mm-hmm. And so it was so difficult. My friends are talking to him. Maybe they'll invite him to something and he's going to be there and he can keep being persistent about this. And then the other thing is like, you're made to feel bad for rejecting someone so consistently. And I especially feel bad because, like I said, I'm so drawn to people who are like these lost puppies and who have like major problems. Yeah. It's just who I am. Yeah. And because of that, I felt especially bad, like consistently rejecting him. And I'm like, oh, he has all these problems. I feel bad for him. Like, maybe I do have to keep like rejecting him, but it's not as bad as I'm making it. Like, he just has issues and I should be sympathetic towards his issues. Mm-hmm. Whereas like no one, especially him, is being sympathetic towards my situation.
That's probably one of the most common type of stalker, like the rejection sensitive, especially thinking back to that original definition and how it was used to describe men having a tough time separating from a woman post-relationship. But then there's a few more too in terms of definitions that also seem like they could fit with whatever you dealt with. So the next one is the incompetent suitor. So this type of stalker is desperate, it's like poor social skills or courting skills, and essentially gets fixated on the victim. Even if the victim isn't interested, it's like this fascination that they have and they're just not gonna give up. And I say that because it reminds me of what you said about how he had this idea in his mind about how like he just needs to keep on trying and win you over and you'll eventually cave in to the unwanted advances.
Oh, totally. It's almost, I don't know if it's narcissistic tendencies that they have these grand ideas that you're their soulmate and there's no possible way that they're genuinely rejecting you. And waiting outside where you live and only to get rejected by you again each time. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just not healthy. Like, and that, I remember one of the times where I was rejecting him, And I asked him to leave me alone. And when I asked him to leave me alone completely, because things were just getting way too far, he like threatened to contact my family. And in my head, I'm thinking, okay, so you are here to harm my family and people I love. He threatened to like beat up people in my life and like all these crazy, crazy, crazy things. Mm-hmm. And I was so scared that I didn't even know after that. I felt like I can't even outright reject him. I have to be so soft about this. I have to stead so carefully, and I need to play his game.
Yeah.
That he can be kind of content with where things are and without anyone in my life being put in harm. Mm-hmm. Because I was genuinely scared. I'm like, if I even try to contact like legal authorities, I mean, first of all, it's so hard that for them to actually believe you and your story. And I was worried that the moment I contact them and the moment I start to press charges, he's going to be drawing in to this drama people I love.
Yeah.
And will seriously threaten them.
Like, I think that's terrifying. And I think it's no wonder that a lot of the time we don't seek help when we should, and we don't leave when we should, because as easy as it is to say like, oh, if it was so bad, why didn't you just leave? It's like, we tried to do that. It's not always the safest option psychologically, mentally, physically, to go and get the help that you do need to get. There's another definition that might fit in terms of your experience, which is the resentful stalker, who has a vendetta because of a sense of grievance against the victim. So they're motivated mainly by the desire to frighten and distress the victim. So a lot of those behaviors, you know, like threatening to harm your family, et cetera, beat people up, it's like an indirect way of scaring you and causing you harm and distress.
I think that was also his way of just like keeping me in his web and keeping me stuck there.
Yeah.
Because if I were to get help from friends or law enforcement, there was the risk of him involving people I love, mm-hmm. and harm being done to them. And I really believed it because he was showing violent behavior and extremely toxic actions. And even the last time I think that I saw him, I remember like this was when he got physical, and he like tried to hold me down in his car because he had texted me that night, I mean, so many times, called me repeatedly. I had been studying with like some friends at university, and he's like, why aren't you replying to my texts? And by the way, at this point, I hadn't blocked his number because I was worried if I block his number and stop all the communication that he's going to actually make his threats something of a reality. Like
you didn't want to instigate or trigger.
I didn't want to trigger anything. So I didn't block his number. I wanted him to see like that I didn't block his number, that his messages are getting delivered to my phone and everything. And so this one night he's like, okay, well, just this one last time, I'll leave you alone after this. Can we just like meet up and talk about things? And I promise like I'll leave you alone after this. There'll be no more threats, whatever. And just because I'm naive, being who I am, I always try to be like the best in people. I'm like, okay, like just this last time, sure, like we can meet up, let's go. And I met him in this like parking lot somewhere, like a Tim Hortons parking lot. And I think I mentioned this to you. And I'm like, okay, let's go inside Tim Hortons and like, let's talk this out, whatever, you can say your bit. And he's like, I don't feel comfortable saying what I need to say in public. And he's like, please just like come in my car and we'll be good. And I mean, I felt scared and uneasy about it because prior to that, he was following me like when I went home, when I went out, when I went to school. He randomly showed up when I was at like a stoplight in my car, and he like was banging on my window when I was on the way to somewhere. And I didn't, in all these situations, I did not call 911 because I was so desensitized, thinking this is not as bad as I'm making it. He just has problems and he needs help. I need to be sympathetic towards that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but so this last time though, we met at this parking lot and I went into his car and he just started like yelling at me, whatever. And I said, okay, like this is not relevant to me. I don't need to take this anymore. I'm leaving. And when I said I'm leaving, he grabbed me. And I had to literally he was holding me down. And I'm not going to get into the details of it because it was pretty bad. But eventually I was able to kind of fight him off, escape. And I literally, with my leg, was able to open the car door and unlock it so that I could get out, run into my car, and then just drive off and get home ASAP. And after that, I was like, okay, this is a problem and I need to do something about it. And I had actually bruises after that night. The evidence was there. Mm-hmm. This is someone who's so much bigger than me. And I'm pretty small. I'm 5'3". I don't know. He's maybe 6 feet. And yeah, a lot stronger than me. So it wasn't hard for him to leave some bruises after that night. But after that I knew okay, this is a problem, I have to do something about this. But when I went to I think it was for the second or third time, I went to the police and they're like, you don't have enough to work a case against him. And yeah, it was insane.
What more do you need than that?
I felt like I had to be on my deathbed before something is getting done.
And so it's just that level of dangerous behavior, legally it's gone unchecked. Of course, we do what we can and make little podcasts and talk about it. But, the reality of the situation is that more needs to be done. As much as we're struggling with this exact same issue, I think for a man, it would be 10 times worse. This girl won't stop calling me. She keeps showing up at my house. Blah, blah, blah. They're going to be so what?
Oh, yeah. And they'll probably be but is she hot though?
It's just, see how little sympathy a man would get in dealing with a situation similar to this.
Oh, for sure. Which is also a whole nother issue on its own. We focus so much on men being the stalkers and persistently and violently pursuing women, but there are these cases where the woman of course is the predator here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. When in terms of types of stalkers, it pretty much just divides it down the middle into psychotic and non-psychotic. So as a perpetrator of stalkerish behavior, there could be some mental health issues that go into why someone is like that. And so some of those could be as extreme as schizophrenia, a delusional disorder, antisocial disorder, things like that. But then there's also a percentage of non-psychotic stalkers, and so research shows that most stalkers are non-psychotic. So it's not like you have this extreme mental health issue going on. In terms of non-psychotic issues that you might have, it's more commonly depression, substance dependence, and then some personality disorders, borderline personality and narcissistic personality disorder. So I guess you had some inklings of okay, this person might have some narcissistic tendencies. But very valid that, there is some kind of psychological, distress or something going on for someone to be engaging in this kind of behavior as well. And that's not even to and make excuses for them, but it's just interesting to think about, what is it that's causing people to act like this? And then another thing that I found interesting was I think there's something called like rejection sensitive disorder or something.
Okay.
And how people who have this disorder are very sensitive to rejection and just don't handle rejection well. And it's usually comorbid with like borderline personality and bipolar and things like that. But it's interesting to see how that might have something to do with someone being a stalker.
I wonder though, like, does that play into like a narcissistic personality? Because I know narcissists don't handle rejection well either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I personally don't know, but I wonder.
Just think for borderline as yeah. well. They're very dependent on their interpersonal connections and relationships. And once that like core person is upset with them or not vibing with them, that just like off puts their whole world kind of thing.
And if you have an addictive personality as well, you wouldn't take rejection well if you've kind of centered your attention on a specific person. I do think, and I think in my case, like, I know he had witnessed pretty like consistent abuse within his family. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like that kind of played a role for him, because he even just subconsciously maybe has this kind of perception that the man needs to like show who's boss.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not gonna take no for an answer.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then it's interesting to see how, you know, there could very well be a cultural element to that as well, and to that feeling of entitlement or that level of misogyny. You know, like, obviously some cultures are a little bit more traditional in that
exactly.
sense than others.
Yeah. You know, with all those Me Too movements, and you're thinking things got better in terms of getting help when you've been through a situation of, say, like stalking, sexual assault, or any kind of harassment or abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you're in it, I don't know if anything's really changed. People put all this stuff on social media.
Like, hello, can we get some clout for our trauma, please?
Come on, let's have it.
Too much. No, like, it's nice. It's really nice to see that, you know, like, obviously, you know, even us seeing that documentary and that triggering us to record something like this, that's amazing. It's things like that we want from documentaries like that and from people talking about it. But I think it's a relevant discussion to have, especially for us ending this discussion of, like, what do we think needs to happen in the future for this to be handled better, whether it's, you know, how do I help my friend who's going through something like this, or what do I think needs to be done in terms of the system for us to not have to go through these kind of things again.
I think it's difficult in terms of the system.
Mm-hmm.
I think in personal life I've noticed that men more often are very eager to question your stories when something bad generally happens to you.
Mm-hmm.
And women do it too, but I would say
even with that, we were talking about how invalidating it can be.
Yes.
When it's specifically,
and
when
that's
another woman
exactly. I think in your personal life, I think what we all can work on is just giving someone that validation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it took so much courage for someone to come to you and tell you about this extremely traumatic experience for them.
Yeah.
And for someone to have the audacity to not validate that, or feel like, wow, that took a lot of courage for you to tell me. Thank you for sharing that. Like, what can I do to help? Mm-hmm. Et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't receive that validation.
Mm-hmm.
And so it made me think, okay, I'm in the wrong.
Yeah.
It's not the other party. I've done something
yeah.
wrong here. Whatever, whatever. So I think the key is that we appreciate that, how much courage it just takes for someone to come to you and to share this like traumatic experience and to validate it.
Yeah, I like that.
Your personal life.
I like that a lot. I think something that might help with that is, you know, instead of the first question that we ask being like, do I believe her, do I believe him, or exactly. not, asking like, what do you need from me, like what can I
exactly
do? Regardless of whether you believe them or not, someone's telling
exactly.
you something, whether it happened or it didn't happen, it's true, it's not true, it's not exaggerated.
Yes.
The bottom line is there's a need that isn't being met and this person is reaching out for support. So rather than getting caught up in, do we believe them? Let's just do the most we can do to support them. Even if you're in that space where you're not able to validate that experience, you're still able to support people even if you don't believe
yeah.
them. Even if that means like a phone call, helping them with groceries, whatever it might be. Like, we've gone through the long, very long list of traumas and, you know, the isolation that people deal with as a victim of this kind of thing. So I think just feeling seen and heard and valued
yes.
and appreciated, it sounds like from your experience too, is something that would have helped you process it better.
Yeah, and then I think that also helps encourages you to seek professional help and therapy to process it, because if someone isn't really there to genuinely support you after you took so much courage to tell them something so sensitive, you're thinking, oh, like there's something wrong with me. Am I just seeking attention? What have I done wrong? Etc., etc., etc. You can go through a list of excuses.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're there to support someone, and your first thing is not to question the credibility of their story, but just to be there for them and to realize, okay, something's wrong,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what the situation is, something is clearly wrong.
Yeah,
that's so important, because then your courage wasn't for nothing. You have your support system,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to encourage you at the very least to seek help for it,
mm-hmm.
for whatever problem is. And like you said, whether or not you believe someone's story is kind of besides the point in that case.
Right, yeah, agreed. I think that's a good ending note.
Yeah.
Support people who are transparent and honest about this. And I think, you know, like, it's always helpful to just be aware of, you know, when things are getting to a level where it could be inappropriate or damaging.
For sure. I think in the personal life, it's a lot easier for us to grasp what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I would say in terms of law enforcement, it's so much more complicated.
Yeah.
And not so black and white. Because, like I said, if you go online, it seems like victims have all this support and it's pretty easy to, I don't know, press charges when need be.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the reality. So with that, I think it's hard to say what can be done on that side of things when it comes to going to authorities.
For me, in an ideal situation in terms of legally, instead of criminal harassment, there would be like a specific stalking charge that encompasses all of the things that we've talked about that someone could get charged with. Because I feel like a lot of the problem right now is that, like, yeah, it's bad behavior, but a lot of this behavior legally, there's nothing we can do about it. So it's like,
yeah.
You can't tell me that it's incriminating bad behavior then if it's genuinely not. Or if it's not to the level
right.
that it is incriminating. There has to be like a clearer definition of what exactly is a chargeable offense and what isn't. Ultimately, when it comes down to it, very few of those things will actually result in someone getting charged or having any kind of legal consequence for the psychological damage that they've caused someone else.
100%. I think you're right. I mean, immediately when you use the word stalking, I just don't think people take it seriously, and that's what needs to change.
Yeah. Maybe even that, like, maybe it's time for it to move more towards criminal harassment, and we call it criminal harassment now instead of stalking, and that's a way for us to take it more seriously.
There's this connotation with the word stalking or stalk.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I just don't think it's taken seriously. Mm-hmm. So like you said, to even maybe give it a new phrasing and new wording and put it under another umbrella so that that connotation isn't there anymore and people can start to just take it more seriously.
Yeah.
I think that could help for sure.
Agreed.
I remember thinking how, okay, I'm sick of this. Like, I'm sick of men taking advantage of me.
Yeah.
I remember even just like after I got married though, like I had to, before that I took a really like many years break from therapy, but after getting married, I had to like go back into therapy again because I realized like, oh, I'm not really capable of being a proper wife to someone because I have not processed this stalking situation and my other history with abuse. Mm-hmm. And this is going to negatively impact the person I'm married to. And it's just like not fair to them. And I didn't even realize these things before getting married, because I think if I did realize it, I wouldn't have jumped into marriage as soon as I did.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing that you, you know, still continue to like take that initiative to heal yourself, whether it was right after the incident or now going back to therapy after your marriage, or even, you know, like being open to having conversations like this. Like, it's always scary, and I don't think people really really fathom how scary and terrifying it is to do podcasts like this and to have conversations like this and to let literally, like, when we do episodes like this, we're very conscious of the fact that when we release this content, anyone and everyone can be listening to it.
Exactly.
So I think, like, at least for me, I just want to take a moment to appreciate that vulnerability and transparency and honesty and authenticity that you're bringing with a conversation like this, because it's not easy to have.
Thank you. I appreciate that for sure. I know, like, we both have had these kinds of experiences with stalking and assault, so, and even me drinking my wine and getting relaxed, I'm still overthinking every little, like, thing I'm saying, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is the first time I am talking about my stalking, and I didn't even go into a lot of details with it, to be honest, but regardless, it's like really the first time I'm kind of like being more open about it and speaking publicly about it.
Yeah.
And I just knew it was time. I was like, we got to do this. When me and you started talking about that show on Netflix with stalking, I was like, you know what? I think this needs to be discussed.
We're just here to support women and to realize ourselves how important it is to have these conversations. And I think another important thing to note is, at least for me, I believe that healing is relational and takes place, you know, through relationships and through experiencing love and compassion, whether it's through yourself or other people.
I feel that. I definitely relate with that. I think it's important to have these stories out there, big or small, regardless of how many details you want to share about your story. Someone is going to relate, and maybe it's going to empower them.
You know, in a way, it is a shared experience. There's a ton of women who have gone through similar things, and we feel sometimes lonely and isolated in that experience of like, why me? Or like, this is terrible, I'm dealing with so much. But sometimes it's just comforting hearing and knowing that, you know, this is something that a lot of us go through, and we're all here to empower each other.
And I just want to encourage other women to, hopefully, if they're comfortable, I mean, get the help, whether it's therapy or finding a support system. It's get it ASAP, because I didn't, and the trauma has, I feel like, affected me a lot longer and more than it should have because of that. I just didn't have my whereabouts. And also trust your like gut instincts with situations and people. Like, mm-hmm. If something doesn't feel right in your stomach, it probably isn't.
I love it.